first wildlife refuges in the West at Malheur, Klamath, and Three Arch Rocks. Our founder, William Finley, actually went out there, took pictures of the amazing birds, took also pictures of the carnage that was occurring at that time. People were going out there and killing huge numbers of birds for their feathers for the fashion industry. Sent those to Roosevelt. Roosevelt met with him, and in 1908, he established Malheur as a wildlife refuge. And so we have a history that goes back over 100 years. It's just incredibly important to birds. Over 300 species of birds use the refuge, hundreds of thousands of waterfowl, tens of thousands of shorebirds, significant portions of global populations of some species. For example, half the Ross's geese in the entire world use Malheur Wildlife Refuge. 20% of the white-faced ibises in the entire world use the refuge. It also historically was very, very productive in terms of waterfowl. Malheur Lake historically produced upwards of 180,000 ducks and geese every year. Today, that's dropped significantly because invasive carp have really destroyed the lake, and there's a great collaborative process going on to restore the lake now. Again, just incredibly important for wildlife, and it's really a place that, you know, any birder in the country would have on their bucket list to go.
Actually, it's a place I have not been yet, believe it or not, in all the years I've lived here. But it's been like every year I think I'm going to go to Malheur. And it's rather heartbreaking right now to feel that so many people who really love the place, appreciate the place, and know its importance are being severed from it. And I'm wondering, what are your concerns that the staff hasn't been able to be on site in a month? And these hooligans are going around building roads and doing all kinds of things that make your hair stand on end.
Yeah, I mean, we're very concerned about it because there's a tremendous amount of work to be done there. They have very limited staffing there, and a lot of the preparatory work is done this time of year, getting the contracts set, getting the monitoring set, and so on and so forth. But very quickly, staff is going to be out on the ground manipulating the water to make sure that it's in the right places for birds coming through, doing monitoring, restoration, and management that's critical to these massive numbers of birds. And there are birds there right now. I mean, no one should go away thinking that it's devoid of birds. Even in the winter, there's large populations. But as we get towards spring, especially March, April, you're going to see massive birds coming through. And if they don't have the habitat, that's very significant.
Actually, I think this is something that a lot of people don't understand, that these great natural areas that we have, like Malheur, are in fact very reliant on human intervention. Why don't you explain why that is and what has to be done to maintain the semblance of naturalness?
These systems are highly manipulated at this point. And so making sure water gets to where it needs to go to in terms of flooding and a lot of water control happens on the refuge, and a lot of habitat management occurs. There's a lot of invasive species. So there's constant work going on in order to provide for the wildlife. But I think even in more tragic right now is the fact that Malheur is a place where there's been incredible collaboration going on. For the last 7 or 8 years, ranchers, county commissioners, Soil and Water Conservation District, the refuge, the Paiutes, conservationists have been working together very, very collaboratively to develop an on and off refuge plan to support the habitat and also support the economy. That's underway, and it's one of the most important restoration projects in the West. Also one of the most important collaborative projects, really bringing together communities that have historically not worked together that well. And it's very, very exciting. So it's very sad to see somebody trying to hijack that and turn it into a place of discord.
Well, do you think the fact that there is such a strong collaboration between the communities and multiple communities and the federal government and the birds, is that affecting the community response to these hijackers?
I think it is. I think you've already heard people speak out about it very eloquently about the fact that we have all been working together. You've heard people express support for the refuge. You've heard the Paiutes express support for the refuge. So there's been a huge, I think, recognition that there's very important work going on. It's going on even while the occupation takes place. That hasn't stopped it. It's a very, very active collaboration. And I think it's going to show the path forward. I think the best way to repudiate this kind of activity, this occupation, is to have it end, have those folks go to jail for what they've done, and have them watch the community, Asian groups, and the refuge working together for a much more bright future for everybody involved.
Step back a little bit and look at some of the political and land use conflicts. It's one of the things that the media has sort of touched on in their coverage. I mean, it's been interesting media coverage because it has been like huge, and yet I felt like there's big holes in it. And one of them is really a great understanding of what the wildlife refuge is all about. Another one is understanding what the politics of these people are who are coming in here. So there's two parts to the question. One is like, what are their politics? And then how are they taking advantage of a very long-term conflict that's gone on between ranchers and the federal government in the West?
In terms of the politics, I think you'll find that a lot of these folks have different personal politics and different agendas coming to the floor. You've got some people who have land use issues with the federal government. Many of them don't actually have land issues with the federal government.
Many of them don't have land, actually.
Right. But that is the issue that they've seized on. Some of them are part of this sovereign citizens movement that rejects many of the parts of the federal government. So everybody's kind of coming with their own agenda and kind of mixing together. And you're seeing a lot of people, I think, from the outside, we're already seeing, you know, people who want to be the different leaders of these groups. You saw the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters come in, these militia groups, and they were asked not to occupy the refuge with Amon Bundy, but they're hanging out in town. They have their own agenda, which is a mystery to me, really. I think that they're waiting for something that is going to activate more of their membership. So you have a lot of these extremist groups that have different ideologies, and they've kind of all trying to get a piece of this pie. A lot of them want to get in front of cameras. They want to talk to reporters. They want to get their message out. And it probably sounds pretty ridiculous to us, but they're trying to get in touch with these little nodes and groups of people that are sympathizers with them.
Well, actually, I think about how you said that it might sound ridiculous to us. Oregon Public Broadcasting has done a number of interviews with these people. And in fact, when I first heard about what was going on, and I just happened to be listening to OPB, and they're doing this, they break in and have this story about how there's been armed men have taken over some federal buildings in Southeast Oregon. And that was the story. And going, huh? And my mind originally went to Malheur because I'm trying to think of what other federal buildings would be there. And there was no background at all. And it was like Saturday night, and then it seemed like none of their regular staff was there. So they were like sort of pulling at straws to try to get information. And they didn't have anybody there who had any background. So they ran an interview with Amon Bundy's father.
Cliven.
Cliven Bundy, right. And he's rambling on and on about stuff, and it's still very confusing. And then I said, oh, Bundy, he's the guy who did the standoff about his cattle. So pieces started coming together. But what I was really concerned about is that the news wasn't helping put those pieces together when this story first broke. It took about 2 or 3 days, except for the Oregonians. Actually, what I wound up doing finally was going up to the computer, looking at Oregon Live, which was the beginning of what I think has been mostly really good coverage of this. And they had a lot of background, and I figured out what was going on. But it's been sort of disconcerting to me that so much of the media can't put the pieces together, which is one of the things that I'm hoping we can do a little bit today. And so one of those pieces is understanding what are really the issues that ranchers have in the West, and how much does that really have to do with what's going on in Malheur right now?
Well, Americans' public lands are owned by 320 million people. And they are managed for multiple uses: forests, national parks, wildlife refuges, BLM lands. They have different focuses, but in terms of these specific BLM lands and national forests, they are for logging and grazing, but also for recreation and wildlife habitat. Carbon sequestration is very, very important. Oregon has 6 of the top 10 carbon storing national forests in the country. So the conflicts kind of arise when you have to deal with these multiple uses. It's not just for cattle grazing, it's for sage grouse habitat. And so that, combined with the fact that we have a limited number of land managers, the BLM takes a big loss on its grazing program. So there are limited resources out there, but the collaborative projects that Bob has spoken about, and those happen in the forest too. The Malheur National Forest has a very positive collaborative group called the Blue Mountain Forest Partners that is working together. And it's the same type of thing we see on the refuge, where it's conservationists and timber companies and officials coming together, sitting at a table and talking through what projects might be possible. Where can we agree? And let's focus on the places where there isn't as much conflict and not everybody gets what they want, but we come together and we create better projects and we work together on our public lands. So I think we're seeing that model being more and more replicated around the country on public lands, and I think it's diminishing those conflicts. I think the problem is when you have these people who are coming in with a very, very extreme political agenda, it's driving those collaborations apart, or it risks the good feelings that have been built up and the trust that have been coming in and working together and trying to get things done.
I think there's a danger too here, though, of allowing armed criminals, and that's what we're talking about here, armed criminals, to drive public discussion. And I really appreciate the fact that Harney County has rejected them, because I don't think right now is really the time to talk about ranchers' concerns or environmentalist concerns. I think now is the time to say these folks are armed criminals. They have made threats. They have intimidated people. They have broken into a public property. They have destroyed public property. They have destroyed habitat. They have accessed Native American artifacts. This is absolutely unacceptable, and no one should be negotiating at the point of a gun. And as long as that's going on, I think everybody needs to stand down to some degree on the issues that they're trying to raise and focus on the fact that this is an armed illegal occupation. And these are folks that have done it before. They got away with it the first time. At Clive and Bundy's ranch, they bragged about the fact that they had federal agents in their gun sites, and if they had made one wrong move, they were ready to shoot. They have come into Malheur and again said, if you try to remove us, we may become violent. Malheur, Harney County has had to shut down its schools for a week. It's had to cancel public meetings because of intimidation. This kind of behavior is absolutely criminal. It's not about a political agenda. It's about criminal behavior, and that's what needs to be addressed. These folks need to be removed peacefully, ideally without violence, but it needs to end. And then these collaboratives do need to go forward, and we'll agree on some things and disagree on others, but we're going to do it in a way that's civil and respectful and builds together as much as possible.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about what's going on at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, which has been taken over for a month now by armed thugs. And I'm talking with Bob Salinger, who is the conservation director for the Audubon Society of Portland, and Aaron Robertson, who's community communications director for Oregon Wild. Okay, Bob, so we won't talk about the ranching issues. I was going to get to another question. I mean, I guess, in a way, I think that's a discussion that has to be had. But I do agree with you that my concern and the concern that I hear from a lot of people in the community is how do we get these guys out of there? And I think that it's important, and this is where I haven't seen much discussion, that we talk about the ideologies of these people. And one of the things that I found really chilling, I came across a report was done by the Anti-Defamation League. And I think actually it was linked to from the Oregon Live website, which I do recommend for just really good background. The Oregonian, it's too bad they don't really have a print paper anymore, but they are, they're doing really good coverage of this. And I don't get the same sense from national coverage that I'm getting from their coverage. There is, as you mentioned, Aaron, I mean, there's a very strong flame of white supremacy and anti-Semitism and incredible anti-immigration. And these people, when they're not doing a standoff with the federal government over cattle grazing, they're down at the border trying to keep those Mexicans out from, crossing the border. And they, as Chris Andre's guest had mentioned, I mean, they're sort of a reflection of the kind of hatred that Donald Trump has stirred up. But I think blaming it on Donald Trump is pretty shallow because, I mean, this stuff goes way, way back. So let's talk a little bit about what is being stirred up, what is coming together, and why it's a bigger threat than just the wildlife refuge to have these people spouting this kind of ideology amassing in Harney County.
I think that what we're seeing is partially a product of the internet age. People are able to find people that agree with them.
It's like ISIL, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they may not be a majority in their community. In fact, they may be just a handful of people all over the country, but they're able to find each other online, and then they talk within a fishbowl, within an echo chamber. And they think that a majority of the American people are on their side because they're only talking to people that agree with them. And I think that emboldens them, and it allows them to take more and more extreme action. I think that's why you're seeing this occupation continue, is because they are only talking or listening within these communities.
Now, I guess I want to get back to what Bob was saying about getting them out of there. I mean, the Oregonian, there are two very strong statements that came out this past week. Coincidentally, after there were demonstrations organized by you guys all across the state last Tuesday in support of the refuge and in opposition to the occupation. And one of them, the Oregonian, came out very strongly to get these guys out and basically said, turn off the power, turn off the heat. So do either of you know why the power and the heat is still on for these people a month after they've taken over the buildings of the whole refuge, and also why they can come and go, why there haven't been blockades put up to prevent them from and their support prevent their supporters from bringing supplies to them and prevent them from getting out of the refuge?
I think that's one of the questions that everybody has at this point. And one of the, you know, you want to be very careful about criticizing the federal response, because obviously no one wants to see this come to a violent end. But at the same time, we've been very disappointed by the lack of communication. There really has been no communication structure at all in terms of keeping the world at large informed about what's going on. And I think in the absence of that, it's very hard to understand any of their thinking right now. You know, it's one thing to not go in and remove them. It's another thing to let them come and go to town, drink, come to public meetings,
steal vehicles.
Go to other states and try to incite insurrections there as well. And that's what they're doing. They're doing it around Oregon and also in other states. That is hard to fathom why that's being allowed to occur. And I think it's very important to understand that that is happening, that these folks are literally leaving and going to other places and working with other groups to try and incite insurrection.
You said before we went on the air, they're trying to do this in Grant County, which is north, a little bit north and west of Harney County.
Right. Mm-hmm. And these are folks that got away with it the first time. Again, at Clive and Bundy's ranch, they threatened federal employees. They grazed their cattle and refused to pay for it, over $1 million in charges incurred that they still have not paid for. They were not punished for that. Their cattle is still on public lands, and they still have not paid their bills. So they've gotten away with it once. So, you know, I think it's important to send a message that we want an expeditious end to this, that we want to see these folks prosecuted for what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, the bigger issue really is this bigger threat to public lands in general, not just Malheur. But their goal is to return public lands to private ownership, to get the federal government out of the business of owning public lands on behalf of all of us. And that's a much bigger movement that they're trying to create. And so, you know, we don't need to just be worried about Malheur. We need to be worried about public lands in general.
Well, actually, this is an aside. One of the things that I heard Evan Bundy's sidekick, I can't remember his name, but the guy who's been doing most of the interviews on OPB, and he was saying that he thinks that the Malheur should be put in charge of by basically the Audubon Society, who he thought should take over Malheur. So I was wondering.
I haven't heard him say that.
Yeah, I did. I thought that was one of the wackier, interesting things. It probably was not planned that it came out of his mouth. Maybe he just read one of your statements or something. But what would you think about the Audubon Society running Malheur?
We were the ones that advocated for the federal government to establish Malheur, and we support Malheur staying as a national wildlife refuge. You know, public lands are incredibly important to the American people. You know, it's really one of the great, great legacies of this country. As Aaron already said, the national parks, the wildlife refuges, our national forests, our wilderness areas, these things are incredibly important to so many people. There's such broad support for it. And I think, you know, along with, you know, supporting an end to the occupation of Malheur, the prosecution of the people that have done this occupation, I think it's also just very important that we really just send an incredibly strong message about how important public lands are to such a broad array of people in this country. And I think that's what you saw last week with the rallies, just tons and tons of people coming out, not just in support of Malheur, but in support of public lands. Again, I find it funny if that actually said that, but no, we're not interested in taking Malheur. We're interested in seeing it protected permanently for the public.
What is the intrinsic difference between having an organization like Audubon or Oregon Wild, for that matter, the Conservancy. I mean, having basically what are private nonprofits running public land as opposed to it being run and provided for by the federal government.
Nonprofits play a huge role in protecting lands, and you know, that's a very important element of natural resource protection. But these public lands are for all Americans, and the government is answerable to all Americans. And so it's just a different thing to have public lands. And it's one of the great legacies of this country is this huge array of different kinds of public lands that we have. It doesn't always work exactly the way we want it to, but that's part of the democratic process, is everybody gets to weigh in and there's a push and a pull. Hopefully we get to a place where these places are adequately protected. But that discourse needs to occur in a civil, respectful way. And we have institutions that allow that to happen. Going in at the point of a gun because you don't get your way is not acceptable. And I think it's also important to know that, you know, these folks, really, their agenda has been moving ever since they got there. Part of the reason the press had a hard time figuring out what they were about, because they had a hard time explaining it. First, it was about keeping arsonists from going to jail. And then they talked about giving the trees back to the loggers. They didn't seem to realize that they weren't at the Malheur National Forest, and they looked around and realized there really aren't any trees at Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. So then they switched their course to give the refuge back to the people. And there have been just a litany of different concerns and complaints. One of the occupiers made a video where he talked about how he really didn't know anything about this issue until he got there and read the Constitution, and now he was fully supportive. Usually before you drive cross country, participate in armed occupation, make threats against federal agents, you know what you're actually going in to argue for. Apparently this guy didn't. So, you know, these guys really are malcontents, criminals. A lot of them have a history of agitating.
That's actually one person who was imprisoned for murder.
Yeah, for killing his father.
Right.
Another one is a guy that goes around to mosques and defaces pictures of the Prophet Muhammad. That's what he's known for. You know, these are really kind of the bottom of the barrel. And
what about the Bundy brothers? I mean, do you think that they are also criminals, or are they a little more elevated than some of their followers?
You know, I'm not going to try and separate them all out.
I mean, they're clearly engaged in criminal activity right now.
Right.
And they've been engaged in it before. I mean, their father has grazed his cattle illegally on public lands, refusing to pay the costs for that, even though those costs are much lower. Those are very, very heavily subsidized costs for grazing on public land. And when the government tried to collect, had an armed standoff. And again, folks at that armed standoff bragged about being willing to shoot federal agents, had them in their gun sights. This is a criminal enterprise, needs to be treated as such.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about what's happening at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. And so I guess in the last part of the show, I guess we'll talk about how to get these guys out. I'm sure we'll come up with a solution to that. Anyway, my guests this morning are Bob Salinger with Audubon Society of Portland and Aaron Robertson, who's with Oregon Wild. So, Aaron, Bob said we need to get these guys out. They need to be brought out. I want to know, what is your plan for doing that?
What is my plan for getting them out? Well, one of them is to actually see some stronger statements from some of our elected officials. We just had Kate Brown come out and very forcefully say, you know, enough is enough. And that came after several weeks. But one of the things that I found discouraging is the adoption by some of our elected officials, and I'm speaking specifically here of Greg Walden, of saying, I don't agree with these tactics, but these folks have a point, and we need to start talking about the jackbooted thugs that are the BLM and the Forest Service. And when we're talking about not negotiating with people at the barrel of a gun, giving them support, going on to the House floor and essentially saying, you know, they bring up some good points. They're, you know, I don't agree with this armed insurrection talk, but, you know, maybe this is the time to start talking about that stuff. And I think that gives them support. At a press conference, they were asked, the Bundys were asked, what political officials support you, and they said Greg Walden is our supporter.
Has he forgotten about that hike he did around Mount Hood with Earl Blumenauer a few years ago?
You know, there are a lot of things that that go back to that. I think he does spend a lot more time in D.C. now, but that's been discouraging to me. And I would like to see some stronger statements come out of our senators as well.
So what would, okay, if we got these strong statements from our elected officials, how is that going to get these thugs out of Malheur?
Well, they'll start seeing that the people that they thought supported them or were at least neutral or not engaging that are state officials, they'll see that that support doesn't exist or that is more forceful. And I think you'll see a little more pressure put on the federal agencies to realize that allowing this to go on as it is creating a very dangerous precedent.
I mean, actually, I mean, there's what they were saying a few weeks ago. Well, there's nobody in danger, so you know, we don't want to escalate the violence. Well, I heard a representative from the Rural Organizing Project on Joanne Hardesty's show last Thursday morning, and she's also I've gotten emails from her, and she has talked about how threatened she's been. I mean, she's had a life threatened. She lives in Southern Lane County. She's been spending time at Malheur tracking it. And the Rural Organizing Project has this whole network of human dignity groups around the state in rural parts of Oregon that have been working specifically against the ideology of these guys, against the Patriot Movement, the sovereign citizen movement, mm-hmm. and the self-styled militias. So she described, I mean, besides her own personal danger that she feels, that people in Harney County, as Bob was mentioning, I mean, the schools were shut for a week, the federal buildings are still closed. I think the courthouse has been closed for a month. The sheriff and a number of other people have had their lives threatened. The people who are really in danger are the wildlife refuge workers, who I guess, and they finally made a public statement on Facebook a few days ago, and they were being discouraged from speaking out publicly. And I'm not exactly sure what encouraged them to do this, except it might also have been the demonstrations. So people are feeling danger. It's more than just disrupting Harney County. It seems like it's really terrorizing Harney County. So I just wonder, why haven't they turned off the power and the electricity?
Yes, you know, there may be some technical challenges to that we've heard, but I think, you know, there's certainly a question as to why these folks are being allowed to come and go. They get to come into town en masse, make a statement. Media gets to go in and out. They get to invite their friends to come out there.
I'm wondering if it's like the hotel owners and the restaurant owners have some kind of clout where this is the first time they're making money in the winter. So, I mean, I've heard that was a story on Marketplace last week, which made me really upset that this is a focus.
Harney County has rejected them, and they stand to lose much more economically in the coming months than they stand to gain from this. And I haven't heard anybody in Harney County suggest this is a good thing because they have some hotel rooms full. I think Harney County has been incredibly strong in terms of rejecting this and speaking out and being unequivocal. The judge in particular, Judge Grasty, mm-hmm. Who has issued some very, very powerful statements saying that he wants it ended. He doesn't know why the government's not responding more quickly. So I think Harney County is very much on record about how they feel about this. As far as it being a dangerous situation, again, these folks have come in heavily armed. They've said that if somebody tries to remove them, they will fight back. They have invited people from all over the country to come with their guns to support them. As you said, they had to shut down the schools. They had to cancel a public meeting today because the militia was threatening to blockade the meeting, and the judge felt it was too dangerous to go forward. To suggest that this is in a dangerous situation is ridiculous.
What would it take to set up roadblocks and to stop people with obvious who are carrying guns, because they're all doing open carry, because you can do that in Oregon. How hard would it be to stop these people from getting to the refuge, or even stop these people at the edge of town and turning them back, go back to Utah, Nevada, wherever you're from?
It's a great question, and I think it's going to take public pressure on the Obama administration, mm-hmm. on the federal government to move this forward. And I think that's critical both to protect Malheur in the short run, and they are destroying natural resources. They are accessing artifacts. They are intimidating the community. None of those things are acceptable. But also in the long run to protect public employees and public lands, because if they get away with this after having gotten away with what they did at the Bundy Ranch, why wouldn't they do it again somewhere else? We know they're trying to incite that in other places. Basically it sets up a paradigm where if they go in and make extreme enough threats, they're allowed to get away with it. And that's not acceptable. So You know, again, we want a peaceful, nonviolent end to this, but we do hope the government starts to really tighten down on it. We hope they bring very serious criminal charges and send a strong message. You know, that's going to be critical to protect public employees and public lands in the future.
So what's the next step to get more pressure so that we start to see a satisfactory government response?
You know, we had our rallies last week, and we're trying to come up with what the next step is, not only for putting pressure on officials and trying to get these thugs off the refuge, but also people are really, really frustrated. And this is an opportunity. We want to give people an opportunity to express that frustration, but try to do it in a positive way. And one of the great things you can do is actually go out and enjoy your public lands. They're owned by all of us. Go on a hike, go visit another refuge, and realize why we have this legacy, why public lands from our BLM lands to our national forests, national parks, all of these things are so important to the natural heritage of all Americans, and nothing could really be more of a little passive-aggressive spit in the eye to the Bundy folks than saying, nope, these are my lands, and I'm going to enjoy them.
I agree. I think there's going to be more rallies. There's going to be more events. There's all kinds of innovative things that are happening. A lot of this is sort of organic, the way it's coming up. Some of it's organized. There's certainly calls for reorganizing as well. But, you know, I love the idea that a couple of guys in Portland came up with of contributing donations to groups that the occupiers hate, Friends of Malheur Refuge and Southern Poverty Law Center and others, where they're collecting donations for every day that these guys stay on the refuge. Those donations go up. I mean, that sends a really strong message. They're literally funding the groups that oppose them now. So there's a variety of different things that are occurring. I think always trying to send a message to your elected officials, not just about Malheur, but that we care about these lands. There's some really important opportunities to protect lands in the next year that are coming up. So it's important not only to say, hey, we want them out of Malheur, we want our existing public lands protected, but also to build that support for future protection as well that needs to occur. So I think across the board, all those different kinds of things are happening, will continue to happen. I know everybody's very frustrated and impatient to see them go, but that shouldn't stop us from mobilizing and sending a strong message. And eventually they will leave. That's the bottom line, is they're not going to be there forever. The last thing I would mention is just that the collaborative efforts that I think are very important, very powerful, are happening even while they're there, very, very actively happening. There's some exciting stuff coming that will come out in the next several days. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good stuff happening out there despite this.
Do you have any specifics, Bob? I mean, I'm wondering if any of these things you're saying that are in brewing, if you have specific things you could mention that people could look forward to participating in.
There are more rallies being planned. There's more organizing around targeted messaging. I would say if you do nothing else today, send an email to your elected representatives, from the governor to the congressional delegation to the White House. Send something to all of them and let them know that you care about Malheur and you care about public lands, because there's far, far, far more people who care about public lands than agree with Bundy. Mm-hmm. And that just needs to come across. We need to reinforce that. And that's going to be the most powerful way to move forward.
Now, I wish I knew more about this, but I know that the Rural Organizing Project is organizing vigils on January 30th, which is this coming Saturday. And I don't have the information in front of me. And I mentioned this to Aaron, who I think you know about as much about it as I do.
I think, yeah, I had an email that I hadn't been able to read this morning.
So I think if you want more information about that, I think that the Rural Organizing Project's website is ROP.org, I'm pretty sure. Or just Google the Rural Organizing Project. I'm sure this will be on the their homepage. They have been in the forefront of really standing up for human rights around the state and also taking the brunt of the kind of hatred that these people have for anybody who's standing up for the rights of everybody.
Well, I think you just used a really important word too, hatred. You know, I mean, because these groups really are affiliated with hate groups. And, you know, that's what a lot of this is about. It's a lot of anger directed sort of at whatever target they can find. And, you know, I don't think anybody should lose sight of that. That's what we're talking about mm-hmm. here. And I think when it's framed that way, I think people across the political spectrum are repelled by it and will turn away from it and look for other ways to settle their differences.
Well, one last thing that I'm concerned about is that people, liberals, tend to like to make fun of these people and call them Al-Qaeda and stuff like that. However, and when you listen to them talk, I mean, they kind of ramble on about the Constitution. You realize that they are a string of non sequiturs and make no sense at all. But sort of a Sarah Palin style of elocution, I think. But I'm concerned that when people make fun of them, they're not taking the threat seriously. And I wonder what you all think about that.
I think one thing that Bob has done a great job emphasizing is these are not the people of Harney County. The Al-Qaedas and these memes, that does not represent that community. That does not represent rural Oregon. It doesn't represent a vast, vast majority of the people in the country. But I think we have to be very, very careful to not mix our frustrations with these occupiers, these thugs, these criminals, with the people who are out there working on collaboratives, who are, you know, trying to make a living. And so I think we really want to be very, very careful about not mixing those two together, because that's how you drive people away. That's how you break up these collaboratives. That's how you become divisive. And again, they're fueled on hate. They're fueled on their hatred for the government and their individual ideologies. And the more that folks in Harney County feel like they're being lumped together with them, we're driving them away. And we want to bring them together. We want to bring them to the table. We want to work together with them on the Malheur National Forest, on the Wildlife Refuge. And we just want to make sure that the message that we send is a positive one that isn't essentially making people more sympathetic with the Bundys.
Any last words, Bob?
No, I couldn't put it any better than that. I think understanding that these folks don't represent Harney County and that those people out there have rejected them is so important, and that we have an opportunity right in front of us to build a very constructive, collaborative future. And that's where I hope the emphasis is put.
Well, great. Well, it's great having you both on. And hopefully we'll be talking about this in the past before too long.
And hopefully.
We can do it. I'd like to come back at some point and actually talk about maybe ways that this event has raised consciousness about the importance of public lands and maybe coalesced a new movement in support of public lands.
I would love that.
Okay. Well, we'll plan for it sometime this spring. Well, thank you very much for talking with me today. We've been talking with Bob Solinger with the Audubon Society of Portland and Aaron Robertson with Oregon Wild. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KIBU, Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll talk with David Freeman and Leah Y. Parks, authors of All Electric America. My engineer is Kate Welch. We're going to go out with some music by the Wild Chapatulas. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening.
And good morning. It is 11 a.m. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, Grace Eagle Reed hosts Disability Awareness. Her guests are from Ride Connection, Aging and Disability, talking about mobility and transportation issues. Stay tuned at 11:30 on Voices for the Animals. Host Courtney Scott interviews Katie Cantrell, the founder and executive director of the Factory Farming Awareness Coalition, about the ecological and social justice hazards of industrial animal agriculture. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm, click on Donate Today. And here's a announcement, a community announcement. The Willamette River Superfund Forum Series hosts a community forum this Tuesday, January 26th.